Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 176, recorded on April 24th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me as usual is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. As always, it's bound to be an exciting show.
Indeed, indeed. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah? You have some company over at the house?
Yeah, my mom's in town, and also, actually, Dave Hamilton's in town, too.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
So
he came with your mom. They just all moved in.
We got to hang out yesterday.
That's cool.
And that was cool, so.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so, we have some stuff to talk about. Apple has announced WWDC, will be in June 10th through the 14th, and tickets
shocking.
Go. I know, right? But actually, most interesting about it is that they pre-announced the tickets going on sale by a day, which is a lot more than they've ever given in the past. So that
it'll be even more sold out and faster.
It'll be super sold out, but that provides a little bit more of a warning and a heads up for people to get their stuff. To get their
yeah,
tickets.
But no, see, last year it worked out pretty well because they were able to avoid having the servers go down hard by doing everything on East Coast time early in the morning and not telling anyone ahead of time. So yeah. Everyone on the West Coast completely missed out. Think of all those developers that weren't hammering the servers.
Yeah, well, a lot of people complained about that.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because a lot of people are developers on the West Coast.
Right. And their bedtime is probably like 3 a.m. if they're lucky. So, of course, they were asleep when tickets went on sale.
Yeah, their bedtime was about an hour before they went on sale.
Right.
But interesting logo. I don't know about you guys. I opened up the mail, the email from them with the announcement. I thought the logo was kind of garbled on my end. The WWDC part was thrown off on the bottom, and I just saw it, and it was very confusing for me because I like to read email right when I wake up. So I'm still in that fugue-like dream state when I read email. So a lot of stuff
doesn't
make
sense. Tuesday.
Yeah. So I was a little bit confused about what was going on. I just saw some colors and odd letters.
So that CSS, which that they did that with, because it was animated also.
Oh, it was?
So, yeah.
Okay.
So your CSS was kind of jacked up.
Yeah, maybe it's because of that fancy mail client that I use that doesn't
work. Animated?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, so you have the kind of boxy-ish shape, and then you have WWDC in the white letters. And then you had the Roman numerals for whatever. Yeah, for 2013, below that. And so it was sort of like a reflection if the whole thing was together. And the 2013 part kind of faded in and out.
I'm not seeing that, but whatever.
Yeah.
Is that only in the email? I didn't see that on the
I believe it's just in the email.
I didn't see it on the email. Oh, well. But yeah, and they're also limiting it to people who are a member of the iOS Developer Program or the Mac Developer Program as of the announcement. So you can't become a developer and then go at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. And all the people saying, oh, this doesn't look like anything Apple's ever designed before. If you remember last year's logo, it was pretty much this. The colored translucent squares making up the Apple logo.
Well, you know, for what those WWDC parties are pretty wild. A lot of those people probably can't even remember last year.
Yeah, I mean, if all went well.
Exactly. And if it didn't and you actually remember last year as a developer, it's okay. Try harder this year.
Try harder. Apple had their quarterly earnings call yesterday, and out of that we learned that iCloud now has 300 million users and 20% growth from first quarter of this year. And a year ago, iCloud had only 100 million users, which is nice. iCloud seems to be working well for people. But my...
when it's working, sure.
Sure, yeah, when it's working. It was down, twice in the last 2 weeks or something like that?
That never seems to impact me. I never noticed it until someone said, it was down for 2 days.
Yeah, it didn't impact me.
Maybe I don't pay
either.
That close attention.
Well, I had a friend who was trying to iMessage me and it wasn't going through his iMessages. And and that friend wasn't you complaining about iMessages. That time.
Although there would be some irony in that.
Yeah. But okay, so my concern about iCloud these days is
that it's lame?
No. I enjoy iCloud. I don't think it's lame. I don't pay anything for it and they offered me some nice services. But the thing is,
yeah, I actually like iCloud. I'm, you know, I think most people here know I'm joking.
Okay, good. But I get the sense from people who don't follow Apple closely that they're not clear on what iCloud does for them.
Yeah, but I don't think that's their fault. I think that's Apple's fault.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because there are a lot of cases where my mother, for example, says, hey, I have this problem, but I figured I should just, like, can I just restart, erase everything and then it'll all come back because it's in the cloud? Or I mean, even that kind of situation makes more sense than some of the things she says regarding iCloud. She just assumes everything is magical and the cloud will just carry her away into oblivion and sweet harmony. With the universe.
All I can say for anybody who is, you know, a tech person or the tech person in their family is, like, just sit down and, like, map out how you would explain iCloud and iCloud services to somebody who doesn't know what they are, say a family member or a friend or somebody who's asking you about this stuff. Like, really just sit down and go, okay, specifically documents in the cloud. Syncing you can kind of get a handle on, but like anything else within iCloud, just sit down and imagine you had to have a conversation and explain to somebody how to use the different services, how they integrate with their different devices and their Mac, and then you'll suddenly and very quickly realize how messed up iCloud is.
Yeah, well,
because it's so anti-Apple's way of being simple and just working, because there's so many moving parts to it and little bits and pieces, and it's just like, so you have documents up there in the iCloud, but they sync to your computer, but you really can't see them on your computer, and they only in some apps will you know where they are. Oh, and yeah, there's folders, but you can only have one level deep, and they don't really work like folders like you're used to having folders, and yeah. The conversation goes like that.
Well, if you're trying to talk about documents in the cloud.
Well, that's just one part. But that's one part. And there's a whole bunch of other you know, bits and pieces. You know, if you want to talk calendar syncing or contact syncing.
Yeah, that seems like a painless thing to say. Oh, it syncs
until
your calendars.
And they say, I'm on Snow Leopard and I don't want to switch.
And then you say it doesn't work. That right. Part's, yeah,
okay.
That part's,
see,
pretty
good.
And then they go, why? And you go, I don't really know, because it totally could work. But Apple just says you need to upgrade. Well, my computer doesn't support it. Well, you're screwed.
See, if someone is on Snow Leopard and they ask me, what does iCloud do? My answer for them is, it's an email account.
Yeah.
And yeah, there you go. Because that's pretty much
no rational reason. There's no rational reason why it's not supported over there.
No, I mean, it really isn't unsupported on Snow Leopard. There were many months where, after Mobile Me was turned off, where I used iCloud calendars and contacts on Snow Leopard. It was really hard to set up.
Well, but, and also, I went through some of that stuff on my show for my listeners because there were some people that really wanted to know how to get it working. And turns out that Calendar works pretty good, and you can get it working. It is, like you said, a pain in the rear to set it all up.
Mm-hmm. Contacts are a lot harder, I think.
Well, and Contacts has this weird bug where if you don't do one certain step, you'll start getting duplicates and triplicates and quadruplicates.
Yeah, I got some crazy duplication on mine.
And what I narrowed it down to is I think it's anything that any contacts that have data in fields that aren't part of what was in Snow Leopard, in Address Book and Snow Leopard, specifically like Twitter handles or Facebook information or certain other fields that are now native to the contacts application in Mountain Lion. If you have data in any of those from your contacts, so say you add that on your iPhone, it seems like those are the accounts that start getting duplicated when you do the sync in Snow Leopard if you've hacked it in. But, I mean, regardless, those kinds of things are just, it's just, like, lame, you know? And then, like, notes are still in mail, but they're really not in mail, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
So, but also announced, also talked about during the Q2 quarterly results, Tim Cook says that they're optimistic about the future and that there are lots of surprises in the works for fall and throughout 2014.
Right. So now we know when the new iPhone and iPad are coming out
in the fall,
which we already did. So it's just that. I mean, that was kind of cool because it sort of confirms that the rumors we've been hearing are true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd for Apple to do, but he basically, in that one phrase, confirmed what everybody was saying.
Yeah, he says amazing new hardware, software, and services will be coming this fall and throughout 2014. So
which means we have
pretty clear.
Three quarters of this year where we get nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you know what's interesting is, did you also see that he mentioned that he would have preferred, looking back, that they announced the new iMacs in January rather than last year?
Yes, which was surprisingly candid for Apple, but it's a new Apple.
Well, and I believe that was based primarily on their ability to mass produce them, right?
Right. Yeah, they announced something and then couldn't actually deliver.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to go over all of the Q&A stuff yet, so I'll ask you guys if you happen to know. Did he say anything about... Did anybody ask him specifically about 10-point... What version are we on now? 10.8?
Well, the next version would be 9.
9. Sorry. That's what I meant. Did anybody ask them if they were going to stick to that yearly schedule on 10.9?
No one asked about that. Huh. Although I believe in Apple's press release about WWDC today, there was a mention of previewing the next version of iOS and OS 10.
Okay. So maybe we'll get the software update before the fall, the software updates before the fall, the OS updates.
Maybe for OS 10, but I had this discussion with Brian Chaffin earlier today when we recorded Apple Context Machine. Mm-hmm. And the consensus we came to was that Apple will probably release iOS 7 a couple days ahead of the next iPhone release, as they have been doing.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't expect to see that until this fall.
Until the fall.
Yeah.
And we'll maybe get a look at it at WWDC.
I'm sure
like.
We'll get a look at it during WWDC.
10 features, right? We get 10 new features.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that one of those features is the ability for applications to hook into Siri.
Yes.
I think that, honestly, as we've been talking about
over and
over again.
How about better third-party APIs for iCloud, going back to our earlier conversation?
Sure.
Both would be wonderful.
That would be great. But I also think that Siri has to be the big thing. That has to be the big...
No, wow. The big thing needs to be upgrades and free trials.
Yeah, that definitely as oh, well. That, absolutely. Those, oh, yeah. But I think that,
needs to be number one on the list.
I don't think that'll be as big of a wow. I think that's going to be like a number three type wow thing. I think Siri as assistant should be the number one wow experience. Maybe number two would be the overhauled design that we've been hearing so much about. But I mean, I'm not discounting the fact that being able to do trials and paid upgrades and that sort of thing would be incredibly significant, because I think it would be.
I want to see them do a payment APIs using people's Apple ID accounts or iTunes ID accounts.
When you for retail, yeah, and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, at that point, I could buy anything because it's pretend money if it's in my iTunes account, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, fake internet money.
I mean, anybody who's been to the Apple store and had that Express, or what do they call their payment thing?
Express checkout.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. I scan Easy a product pay. In the store and walk out.
Yeah, anybody who's had that retail experience, I want that retail experience like every place.
I think a lot of stores wouldn't go for that because they don't have the Apple philosophy of let's just trust the customers, because not that many people are going to rip us off.
Mm-hmm.
I think most retailers are operating under the philosophy of, if you come in the store, you're going to steal from me unless I stop you.
But I mean, even if they extend that to the Starbucks model, using Apple's payment system, where they have a little scanner at the front checkout, and I hold my phone under it with a barcode or whatever, and then it's tied into the wallet thing. Why am I blanking on everything today?
CardStar?
No. Passbook,
thank you very much.
You know, I would be okay with something like that too. And yeah, having played with a couple of the payment systems where you bring up a barcode on your iPhone and pay with that, I've had good success with that. The only times I've actually had problems are when the systems that they use to scan my barcode are down.
Yeah. Well, and so have any of you done the Square Wallet thing yet? I have not had an opportunity to use that yet.
I have not.
Yeah. Where, you know, it just uses your picture supposedly at certain retailers. And so when you get within range, if you've enabled the payment system,
your photo,
I guess, it ties into their Square system at the retailer, and your photo comes up at the cash register. So you just walk up, they go, "Oh, it's you. Yep, go ahead." And then you walk out and it just charges your Square account for whatever they rung up.
Yeah, and I haven't found a place yet that's actually using that.
Yeah. I've talked to some people who've used it, and they say it works awesome. So I just haven't had
I have used Level Up at a couple places, and that's worked really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I think that the it seems more clear that it makes more sense for retailers to use stuff that scans the screen, mm-hmm, rather than stuff that uses NFC. Just because, you know, it requires less infrastructure change and just overall, I think it's
easier. Well, yeah, and in the States, it's my understanding, you know, outside the U.S., in certain countries, NFC is kind of taken off, especially for like micropayment kind of things. But here, I have a ton of cards. It really frustrates me. I have a ton of cards that have the chips in them, and they have the, you know, the whatever they call that, where you're supposed to be able to pass it over the little scanner. And I've seen the scanners at tons of places that I go, but every time I try and use one, like, the retailers usually shut me down. They're like, "Oh, don't use that. It doesn't work." Or, "We don't, you know, just slide the card." Like, they
just slide it. Don't do that thing.
Right. Or like, if they don't care, it turns out that the card you have isn't compatible with the system they have.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the other problem. So,
well, that is one of the things that Tim Cook mentioned, is that the mobile payment stuff is quote unquote in its infancy. And it is.
But the thing is, at least in the US, almost everybody I know has an iTunes account.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they have an iOS device or not, you know, it seems like at some point, even on Windows, they've, you know, opted in to buy something through iTunes at some point. So
yeah, but it's certainly only going to be useful if you have an iOS device on you.
Yeah, at that point. But
otherwise, I mean, entering your email address.
But if you're looking for ubiquity of a system, you know, a lot fewer people have Square, and you've got major retailers implementing Square, than, you know, have an iOS device. So Apple does have a lot of power in that realm. So that's just something that I think would be interesting to see them roll out. I don't think they're maybe quite ready to do it yet, but I still firmly believe that, you know, every time I see a rumor that says Apple's doing NFC in an iPhone, I'm just like, there's no way they're doing NFC. They're going to leverage iTunes in some way. And I really believe that Passbook, some sort of combination of the Passbook technologies and the payment system technologies they're using in their retail stores, is the kind of thing that Apple would push forward when they're ready to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the more I think about it, I think that you're right about how useful it would be to use a system based on iTunes accounts, because so many people have them more than anything else, I think. And that would reassure most retailers.
Yeah. You've got a brand name Apple behind it, right? And for the customer, I don't have to give out my credit card number to some other system. I don't have to give it to Square. I don't have to give it to LevelUp. I don't have to give it, you know, Apple already has that information, and I've already trusted them with that information. So now I don't have to give it to another third party.
Yeah, and right. Apple could add in their an extra layer
the fingerprint scanner, right, that we're hearing about.
Well, maybe if they're going to put in fingerprint scanner, but it could also be just simply... My main fear with LevelUp, for example, is I am not sure the special QR code that's generated for you is unique every time you open the application. To me, it seems like you could take a photo of that and then just use it over and over and charge to the LevelUp, for example. And I think that with a simple confirmation or adding whatever sort of security Apple wants to do, or just providing that option to you, would be very useful. And the fact that you could just scan it with, again, an Apple device, so you'd have Apple encouraging retailers to have Apple devices, or maybe a lot of the people who work there already have Apple devices, they can just download the application and start accepting payments that way. It would be very nice.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting idea. I like it. So do you think we'll see, do we want to talk any more about what we might see other than new iPhone, iPad, iOS this year? Do you think we'll see TV? I think the watch is bogus. I don't think we're going to see a watch.
You know, we could see some sort of wearable tech if Apple has a way to present it to us that that totally blows us away. If not, nothing. But everyone is fixated on the watch as the wearable tech because that's the buzz phrase right now. So we'll see. But Apple did, I think it was Tim Cook said that they're excited about a new product category. So that could be wearable tech. That could be something that's entertainment. Well, we don't know what it is.
It might not even be this year. I honestly think that this year they're going to be focused on the two out of the three, the services and the software ends of what they mentioned they have in store for us. I think that is really what needs to be worked on, and I think that that's probably what they will be focusing on this year more than anything else.
You know, how come we're not talking, now that you mentioned software really kind of briefly there, and I'm assuming you mean mostly iOS.
Certainly, yeah.
Software. How come we're not having a conversation, or nobody's asking the question about what's happening with Apple's other software offerings, and specifically on the consumer side, and I'm talking about iWork and iLife, which are both getting really, really long in the tooth, in my opinion.
Well, I think that, I mean, my just off-the-cuff sort of response to that would be that they're good enough. They're doing fine.
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Tell me why.
They are good. But they're very lacking compared to some of the other options that are out there. They definitely need to improve compatibility with Microsoft Office for iWork.
Mm-hmm.
And they also need to work on compatibility cross-platform between iOS and OS X. Because it's what I have found, especially with Keynote, is that using iCloud to make sure that I have a Keynote presentation on my Mac and on my iPad means that I have to be extremely limited in what I do with my document, because it's going to break on the iPad, and they need to address things like that, and for people that use these applications all the time, that they routinely come up against little things that are big problems for them and need to be addressed.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that. On GarageBand on iOS side, I'm dying for them to add the ability for me to import or add in raw audio files. Within iPhoto, I think the management of video files is a complete mess. I don't think they should be in iPhoto at all. Apple needs to solve that sort of problem somewhere. And I don't know if iMovie is the problem or the solution, or if it's a separate video app that manages your video files on your Mac. I more like on iOS. I don't know. But I get lots of questions about that from people. It's like, I put videos into my iPhoto and they're not syncing to my device. It's like, well, you got to drag them out and put them into iTunes or export them into iTunes. And then it's a nightmare. So there are a lot of little daily annoyances within those applications, and I'm totally with you on the iWork side of things too, Jeff. It's not quite as seamless as it should be. I don't know. I don't know what Apple's been doing this year, I guess, is where my confusion is. It's like, we're not going to see anything till the fall. They're working on iOS, obviously. They're working on the next version of OS X, and they say they have some great new hardware stuff, but if they're not going to bring, getting back to, what started this conversation, if they're not going to bring us a new category of products, what the heck are they doing?
Well, I think that's what we're going to hear more about at WWDC. Obviously, in the past, Apple hasn't been a company that talks about what they're doing before they actually have something to show us.
Right.
And I think that the idea of a quiet period for them is a good sign, in a sense, that they're actively working on something.
It might be a good sign, but it's frustrating as a fan of Apple,
investors.
You hit the nail on the head there. That's super frustrating for investors.
Well, I mean, that is the way that they have operated in the past, certainly. And I think there are a lot of people who say that Apple is at a point where they can no longer do that. I suppose that
no longer do what?
No longer be as secretive as they have been in the past. And I think that, at least the way I would do it, is at this point in the game, you make this next run that they're currently working on to see if they can do what they do, where they stay secretive for 6 months or whatever, and then bring out a whole bunch of really cool stuff. And then wait for another cycle of that and see what happens. If they get the same sort of reaction where there's a lot of confusion and upset over the fact that we're not sure what's going on within Apple, and if people continue to no longer accept the secrecy of their process, and if that doesn't happen, if they don't accept it, if that reconditioning of sorts that they're likely trying to reinstill doesn't work out, then they're going to have to stop being as secretive as they have been.
Oh, Michael, you're so pretty.
It's interesting that he brings that up, because I've been thinking about this a lot as well. And we had that period where Tim Cook, I think was it at last year's quarterly results call or at the last quarterly results call or the one before that where he said Apple's going to double down on security stuff?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And everybody was like right after that, we had a bunch of leaks and a bunch of stuff that was still kind of ended up being accurate. And everybody's like, well, so much for doubling down on security. I think what's happening right now is that thing that he was talking about. I think there is a lot of misdirection and, you know, confusion. And a lot of these rumors we've been hearing about TVs and watches and things like that. I think some of this is pure genius. So getting back to my original conversation, I'm very frustrated as a fan of Apple that we haven't been seeing new products and things like that. But more and more, I'm beginning to firmly believe that this has all been strategized by Apple and that this is part of, one, the doubling down on security. Two, the other thing that I think that Apple realized, and I don't know whether it came from Cook or whatever, they realized over this past year as their competitors started bringing out products that they have a really big lead in so many of these markets and these areas that they really have the ability to sort of slow things down a little bit and take their time with crafting products. And I think we saw a couple missteps and Tim Cook had to apologize for a few things, right? And so I think they're moving away from this, hey, we don't have, you know, they're moving away from this, we need to rush stuff out because our competitors are, you know, nipping at our heels. And I think they looked back and went, wait a minute, they're really not bringing out anything revolutionary. We're still many steps ahead of them and we can take a little more time. We can get this whole leak security thing under control and we can really do what we need to do stuff right. So I'm excited about what he was talking about in this quarterly results call saying we're going to have stuff at the end of this year into next year because I don't think they need to rush out products. I don't see anything that's hitting the market right now that is a threat to sort of what Apple's current products, right? And if what they bring out in the fall and in 2014 are amazing products that revolutionize, you know, do all the things that Apple used to do, I think they can take the time to get there. Yeah. This is what I'm getting at.
Well, okay,
so it's not surprising to me, but it is incredibly frustrating to me as an Apple fan. It's like, I want something. Give me something. And I'm still super pissed about the Pro system. So I'll just throw that out there, too.
Yeah, I'm surprised on one hand and not on the other that we still don't have anything new on the Pro side. And Tim last year did say there's something coming in 2013 for Pro users.
It's sounding like there isn't at this point, right? I mean, based on the call today, I'm like, there's nothing coming for Pro users. Although I think
well,
he did
maybe this
address
fall.
It, right? Was he asked about that or not asked about that?
I don't think so.
What are these guys doing sure. in these calls? Why are they not calling him to task on certain things? It's like,
why don't you
where's
call
the freaking Pro system?
Yeah. Well, because can we get more color on the Apple television? Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
These guys have such a hard on for a television
yeah.
that they can't ask the pointed questions.
So that was a little frustrating for me. But I totally am with, I mean, I think I'm totally starting to see and understand what Apple's up to. And it's frustrating to us. It's frustrating to analysts. It's killing their stock price. What's interesting is that they didn't seem to be too concerned about the stock price. And I think today they really addressed it with a dividend thing, right? So that should help
that
get
purpose.
Them through. I think that was to help get them through and sort of stabilize things a little bit until they can get these products out the door. So that was more of a time buying measure, I think, than anything else.
I agree.
I wanted to ask you on one of your points, Adam, yep. about you say that Apple is so far ahead of everybody else. Can you give me a couple of points on what you're referring to?
I'm just specifically referring to, like, I'll go read reviews. Like, I was reading some thoughts from Rene Ritchie on the Galaxy Nexus 4. Or
the Galaxy S4, not the Nexus.
S4. Yeah, sorry, S4. Excuse me. Galaxy S4. And, you know, it's a step up in the phone. It's a nice phone. It's got a big screen. He mentioned a couple things about the screen still not being, in terms of the color reproduction and things like that, on the same par as the iPhone S screen. And it's really just an iterative evolution of that product. So it's not something that, you know, for someone who is an iPhone person, is going to drive them over to a Galaxy or move the needle one way or the other. And so a lot of the products that are hitting the market are Me Too products. Apple still has a huge lead when you look at the numbers in terms of tablets. You know, most people are buying iPads in one form or another. So Apple's only been their own, you know, their own worst competitor or best competitor in terms of that, with bringing out the Mini, because the Mini's sort of taking market share away from the full-size iPad. But, you know, it's not like people are rushing out to get Android tablets and things like that. So
certainly,
You know, so specifically what I'm talking about is there's not anything revolutionary coming out that is going to drive Apple's customers or the people who want an iPhone at this point over to another device just because, oh, this thing's on the market and it is so much better than what Apple is offering, right? It's either at the same level or maybe has slightly different features that consumer prefers, and they probably never would have chosen an iPhone for that reason anyway. So it just doesn't seem like they're being threatened. And yeah, their market share might be slipping a little bit, but they still retain, and I talked about this on my show, all of the different areas where they retain profit share. They're making more revenue on app downloads. They're making more revenue on smartphones. They're making more revenue on computers. They're making more revenue, you know, than all of their other competitors. So as long as those things exist, Apple does not have to worry about, yes, there's another cheapo Android phone out there and it took 2 or 3 percentage points of our market share, because that's not going to hinder the company. And especially with their cash on hand, that's not really going to threaten them. So that gives them this buffer. That's what I'm talking about. It gives them this buffer to take time, right, and really craft and create a vision and do the things that they have always done, which are create a full experience in a full, well-thought-out methodology for deploying whatever new revolutionary device that they're going to, you know, and market they're going to go after next.
Yeah. And that's certainly the smart way to go about it, if that is in fact
how they're
doing.
Yeah, and I think they fell away from that a little bit. And I think, again, that's why I think we had things like, you know, Maps that were not kind of fully baked, but they were worried about what Google was doing with Maps. And even with you know, Siri and some of those technologies, it's sort of like when in the past, beyond, you know, when they released OS 10 beta, when had they done beta products? You know, why were they doing that? And you have to ask yourself why. And I think some of it was some of the fear of just how quickly their competitors were pushing stuff out. But I think what they stepped back and realized is most of their competitors are just, and I think Rene Ritchie wrote this in his article that I read, so I'm probably stealing this from him, but they're just throwing features at the wall and trying to see what sticks.
You know, I wonder if...
Yes.
Yeah. I completely agree with a lot of that. But I just had an idea. I wonder if the cool assistant stuff that I'm predicting that we'll see from Apple, if it will be demonstrated at WWDC along with Siri APIs. But
that would be awesome.
But that the Siri APIs will be available in the fall when iOS 7 rolls out. But I wonder if the, because it does take a lot of work, I wonder if the assistive features will maybe not come to consumers until 2014. If they will be shown off and announced, but they will be, I feel like they'll either do beta, it'll either be called beta, which you just said is kind of a stinky idea.
I think they need, for Apple to do that, that's just not an Apple way of doing things.
Right.
That,
or they'll just announce it, say, hey, it's coming, kind of deal. This, we're showing it off, and maybe even have some plugins for developers. Very likely have some hooks for developers, but it'll be something like, I feel like push notifications when they were first announced took maybe like 6 to 9 months to actually roll out and be ready, right? That took a long
more,
time.
More, I would argue more than that, but yeah, your point is well taken.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that it's a really great feature, but I wonder if it will be, it'll take a lot of work on both Apple's part and on the part of developers that, that work a lot with users on a day-to-day basis, applications like OmniFocus and Things and all those other sorts of applications.
Yeah, I think Apple, if they're going to show it, they're going to have it ready in the next version of the OS. I don't think it's the kind of thing show it and then not have it when iOS 7 comes out. I do think that they'll do the same thing that they do with push notifications, you know, sort of to your point, Michael, and they will show it off. They will integrate any new features that might be appropriate into their own applications, and they'll make the APIs available for developers. But it probably will, I mean, because of what you're talking about, there will be this lead time of 6 to 9 months before developers really start in any significant numbers rolling it into their applications.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So it'll be more fully baked into native Apple applications and the whole API third-party access to that sort of data. It won't fully come to fruition for a little bit longer due to the fact that the puzzle is incomplete by not having the third-party stuff involved.
Yeah, Apple will have their side ready, and they'll give it to developers, and they'll say, okay, now start using it. But developers won't have, beyond the two or three developers that they'll bring up and say, hey, we worked with these guys and we integrated it and it's in their next version of their apps. Beyond those handful of guys, you're going to have 6 to 9 months before other developers are able to sort of figure it out and roll it into their applications. You know, I get that from like just being in my iOS group when we go and we talk about APIs when they come out and things like that. It takes developers a little while to parse through the documentation, to play around with it, to figure it out, you know, how it's going to work in their applications, to even figure out how they want to use certain features in their applications. And, you know, that's just a thing that there's no way around that. It takes time, as you're pointing out. So I think then that's exactly what we saw with push notifications. You know, Apple worked, I can't remember if they had some developers on stage at that WWDC that they worked with integrating push notifications or if they only did it within their own apps. But, you know, it'll be that sort of thing. It's like, hey, we brought in, and they'll have that developer that says, oh, yeah, you know, with Apple's help, I was able to roll this into my application within 3 weeks. But most developers aren't going to have that kind of, you know, one-on-one help from Apple.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen that quickly. But I do think, I really do think it's time for Apple to open up those APIs. And I would not be surprised to hear that announced at WWDC.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope you're right. Because that will make so much of what Apple has built so much more useful for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing that I recognize, or I really think that it'll be, is it will still be, because you have to kind of genericize those things a little bit. So even those integrations are going to be tricky because they're going to have to be for specific types of functionality and for specific types of information. So that set might be limited. So it might not be like every application is appropriate to take advantage of whatever Apple exposes. But hopefully it'll be the start of the flood where Apple says, okay, we have these kinds of things that you can integrate your app with Siri. And we're going to be expanding, you know, as we move forward, other kinds of touch points.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I think that Apple, I would say the one gaping hole, again, in my opinion, for Apple in what they're doing relative to other competitors, namely Samsung, is the lack of a larger iPhone. And we put out the call to listeners last show to write in, call in, whatever, about whether or not you would be interested in getting a bigger iPhone or maybe a smaller one or sticking with it. And I have to say that significantly more people responded to say that they wanted a bigger iPhone. There were a few who said that they we're cool with what it is right now. And a couple even from that group said that they might even prefer the 3.5 inch. But a significant number of people, wrote in or posted on the comments to say that they would love a bigger, significantly bigger iPhone. So I'm glad that justified what I was thinking. But I mean, I think that I really think that that would help them, because there are so many people who say, I wanted to get the Android phone because it has a bigger screen. And it, there are so many reasons. There are a lot of people who wrote in and gave a lot of reasons for bigger screens, such as, you know, just seeing more content or bigger controls or having a larger thing to show off photos on and that sort of stuff. But I think that the content argument is the biggest, seeing more of a web page kind of thing.
You know, up until yesterday, I was still in the camp of no bigger iPhone coming. And now I think a 5-inch iPhone is on the way. But I hope Apple keeps the iPhone 5 screen size as an option as well, because I don't want a bigger iPhone. I can barely manage the screen on what I have. A bigger iPhone now becomes a two-handed device. And if I want a two-handed device, I've already got an iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that we would need to either stick with, I would say at least stick with the current size, the 5-inch iPhone, if they do add a bigger iPhone.
You mean 4-inch?
Yeah, 4-inch, sorry.
Because I was just going to comment on what Jeff was saying. I am firmly believing that at least not this year, we're not going to see a larger screen iPhone. And I also don't think there were a couple rumors, I think this past week or so, that the lower cost iPhone would have a 3.5 inch screen. And I also on my podcast mentioned that I didn't think that was going to happen either. I really think that no matter what Apple does with respect to the iPhone, they are going to standardize on a single screen size, just for the pure simplicity of not only, you know, having one screen size for all their devices, your current devices, whichever one is the current model that the models that they're selling, but also just for developers as well. I think it just makes things much simpler. So I could see them moving to a larger screen size, but I think when they do, every iPhone moving forward, however many models they end up having, are going to be at that screen size. So I do think the low-cost iPhone is happening this year. I think it will be a 4-inch screen. And I also think, well, when we see the iPhone 5S, it will be a 4-inch screen. That's just my take.
I'm with you on the low-cost iPhone screen. Apple has, except for its discount iPhone models, everything has gone to the iPhone 5 screen size for the small device. Mm-hmm. And I think that whatever low-cost iPhone Apple makes, it will have that same screen size, because it's a lot easier for developers. And what I would like to see Apple do, now that I'm certain that a bigger iPhone's on the way, I'd like to see them keep this size and have the bigger size, but do like they did when they did the screen size transition for the iPhone and for the iPad, where they change things in such a way that the ratios work so that developers can come up with one app that fits both screens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to do the math, but I just, how do you do that when you go from a 4 to a 5-inch screen? Because it's not, I mean, you can't just, you're going to have more pixels. You're not just going to make bigger pixels, right?
Right. So you're coding for the bigger screen, but it's at a ratio that scales down correctly to the smaller iPhone screen.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening this year. I think, you know, larger screen maybe in 2014, but I haven't seen numbers from anybody that sort of backs up that there's a large number of people that are like, I have to have a 5-inch screen or I'm not buying an iPhone.
Yeah, I'm not expecting to see it this year either.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's okay for me. I could whine about it all the time, but being that I bought an iPhone 5, I don't really want the opportunity to buy a better phone this year, because then I would have to pay extra.
Yeah. I mean, for me, bigger screen isn't going to make it better. It's not going to make it necessarily worse either, but it's just like, I guess I just don't care that much. You know, I put my iPhone next to some of the Samsung phones with larger screens, and it just, to me, it doesn't seem to make that big a difference. And actually, more for me, it seems like that thing's going to be really hard to jam in my front pocket of my jeans. So I just don't want to deal with it.
I think that'll be one of those. Certainly, if it can't fit in my my jean pockets, then that'll be a problem.
Well, it can fit, but it'd be, you know, at a certain point, it becomes a comfort sort of thing too.
Hey, you gotta let the you gotta break them in. You gotta break it in for the bigger phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm just not even across that line. You have no idea how difficult. But no,
good. Yeah, okay. So in addition to those sorts of rumors we've been seeing for iPhone 5S, that we'll likely see a 12 megapixel camera on there with better low light. So right now we're at the 8 megapixel 2.4 aperture that we've had on the since the iPhone 4S on the iPhone 5. I think it makes a lot of sense that we'll see that. They've typically been doing that with the S models.
If they don't bump up to 12 megapixel, I'm fine.
Yeah, me too.
What matters to me are the optics and the sensor.
Well, and bringing the f-stop down. Well,
and the f-stop. But
do they have to go to a 12? They don't have to go to a 12 megapixel sensor to necessarily get better low light performance.
No, not at all. But I think that, I mean, better resolution's nice if they can do it in a high quality way, and that's typically how Apple has approached the situation. But I'm completely with you that, I mean, I didn't even realize. I thought my camera was better than the iPhone 4S, you know? I had the iPhone 4, and I went to the iPhone 5, and I didn't even realize that it wasn't a bump from the 4S, because it's so good. It's great.
They still have the best. Whatever the megapixels are, in my opinion, they still have the best camera that is on any phone device. And I've seen that repeated in review after review after review. You know, that there's higher megapixel cameras out on other devices, but everybody seems to think color reproduction, the performance, just the quality of image when you look at it is superior on iPhones.
Well, I think that's changed sensor. With the, it is the sensor, but I think that's changed with the, based on the reviews that I saw, the GS4. That the Galaxy S4 camera is as good, or maybe even better than the iPhone 5.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen those.
Jeff, have you seen that?
I haven't seen any images personally from the GS4, so I'm going to withhold judgment.
Okay, fair enough. Did you see that? There's a part that leaked supposedly of the iPhone 5S, and I'm only bringing this up because I think it's interesting that they have instead of a switch for supposedly the ring silent switch is being replaced with a push button, which I think is a crazy idea and is a bad crazy idea.
Yep.
Really bad.
I think that maybe they don't understand what this push button is for. I'm wondering if it might be a dedicated camera button.
Ew.
Yeah? Ew?
Why?
So now you've taken the phone and made it even more just a right-handed device.
Sorry, Jeff.
Well, I mean, why do we need a dedicated camera button?
You know, more...
To have an extra one more button on it?
Yeah, you're right. You know,
Steve Jobs died and now we can put more buttons?
Well,
yay, more buttons.
Actually, now that I think about it, I wonder if that would be a kind of a crazy idea. I'm totally fine with the way that it is set up right now, because it's pretty quick to jump into the camera mode the way it's set up right now, and also take photos.
You mean like a dedicated camera button like other phones to just launch the camera app?
Yeah.
I thought you meant like a shutter button.
No, sorry. that doesn't make any sense. But the one thing about it is, okay, yeah, it's great. It's a really easy switch into the camera when you have the thing off. But when you're in another application, in order to, I would say the quickest way to get to your camera is to turn it off, turn it back on, and then hit that thing. Know what I mean? So, but I do ultimately, no matter what.
I almost always have the camera app open, so I just always do the double tap thing. And
right. Yeah, that's what I end up doing.
And no matter what, I typically, I think that the switch, removing the switch and replacing it with a push button would be crazy.
For like the mute? No, that makes no sense whatsoever.
I think the only reason why they would do that is if the phone would be just too thin to have a switch in it. And I think it would be too thin. Like too thin.
The problem with having a mute thing that's just a push button, you don't know if it's muted or not.
Yeah.
Right. Or you're going to mute accidentally. And it's easy enough to mute accidentally with that slide switch. But if it was a push button, even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think more importantly is the little orange visual that I get. Then I can, like, you know, when they say silence your phone, you turn it on its side. Oh, it's already silenced. It's orange.
Yeah, definitely.
You
know,
you totally lose that ability. So now you've got to, probably pop something open, you know, or at least wake up the phone and look at an icon, hopefully on the home screen, that shows if it's in silent mode or not. That's dumb.
Which is dumb. It defeats part of the purpose of Apple designing their silent mode switch like they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can take your phone out of your pocket, enable silent mode, and the screen never comes on, so you're not disturbing anyone around you.
Yeah. Yeah. That just doesn't make sense. Moving on.
Yeah. Did you guys see the Focus Twist application that lets you sort of do that Lytro camera style thing where you can choose what you want to focus on in your images?
I did not, but that's cool.
Jeff, did you see that?
I have not. Okay. I've heard of it, and I haven't bothered to check it out yet.
Okay, I wanted to see what you guys thought of it. It seems like a neat idea, but I guess the way they do it is the way that you would expect them to do it without the special Lytro technology, and that you have to, it takes multiple photos at different focal lengths in order to provide that option to you. So I think it would be way cooler if they somehow managed to magically capture that stuff without having to stand and hold it steady.
Right. Well, yeah, and as I understand, it's kind of limited in how you use it. So
I imagine
you have to be very close to the foreground object.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Did you see that? Apple is supposedly in talks with Apple. Apple is in talks with Apple. Facebook is in talks with Apple to bring Home to the iPhone. And I think, I'm going to say, no, yeah, that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen.
Even if it was, who cares? So, I mean, seriously, like the reviews that I've been reading in terms of, yes, Facebook Home has had a ton of downloads, but overall, I don't think it's revolutionizing the devices that it's on.
I think that it's been painful for some people because of the fact that, yes, it's cool that they want this to be a people-centric device, but then at the time that you want to get to something that is not a person, you want to get to an application, it's just totally stupid. It's really hard to get to applications that aren't your favorite apps. So you have to drag your head down to the thing and swipe over to the right and go into your applications and then go to your all applications and then you can find it kind of thing.
Well, and I think for dedicated Facebook users and people who are really into Facebook, it's great.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it's probably very awesome. But I mean, the updated Facebook app with the chat head thing, on my iPhone, I actually really like. And for me, I think it's enough. You know, when I want to interact with Facebook, I go into Facebook and I prefer that methodology versus always having Facebook sort of there and ready for me. But I'm not a heavy Facebook user. So I could see it. I can understand why they do it on Android and why certain people would want it. I wouldn't, necessarily want a Facebook phone, like the Facebook first thing. But I think it's great that if you're a heavy Facebook user and you're an Android user, you can download the app and you can do that to your device. I think a lot of people are going to really enjoy that. I just don't think it's a broad enough spectrum for Apple to sit down and talk with Facebook and to even have that be a high-level part of the system. I mean, unless they're going to throw a ton of money at Apple, and Apple doesn't really need that money, so I don't even see why Apple would even consider it, because it takes Apple's branded experience and makes it a Facebook branded experience, and they're not going to let that happen.
No, Apple has been very adamant about controlling their user experience across their devices, and especially with iOS. So they are not going to give that up. And certainly not to an interface that Facebook creates.
Yeah.
Even with ex-Apple engineers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do like the chat heads. I like that idea. I would like to see chat heads or some sort of similar incarnation on iOS. I think those are neat. Not for Facebook.
It would be iMessage heads, but yeah.
They'd be iMessage heads. But, yeah.
You know, someone's going to have to give me a compelling reason why I would like to have chat heads.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I like that when I'm on an iOS device, I have a more focused view for what I'm doing, which is a big change from when I'm sitting at my Mac and I'll have, excuse me, God only knows how many windows open across God only knows how many applications. And I mean, like right now, I'm looking at Skype, Mail, two different web browsers.
Two different web browsers?
Yep.
So something other than, what is it, Omni Web?
So I have Omni Web and Safari right now. And then Kiwi and Wedge and Tweetbot and those are just the windows that I can see right now. But and I know there's more stuff in the background. So it's kind of nice having that focused view on my iOS devices. Adding chat heads in takes that away because it just takes that away.
Turn off the chat heads, Jeff. Everybody else will like
it. Oh, don't worry. My chat heads would be off.
When I updated my Facebook application and I had those in there, I really did enjoy the interface. But, it certainly is one of those distracting things. And I'm with you, Jeff. On my iOS devices, I tend to like the sort of focus that it gives you where you're only in one app at a time.
Yeah, and if I'm doing something where I want to have an overview of more stuff at once, that's what status board is for. And then I have a limited amount of data points that I can monitor at any given time. And so even then, it's still not a wild free-for-all of information flowing at my face.
Yeah, I'm starting to find I'm using more and more on my Mac, now that I have Mountain Lion, the trick to open up the notification center and then slide it down and turn the switch to off so that I'm not bothered for 24 hours by all the crud coming in. And so the idea of that happening on my iOS device with like chat things popping up, always on, always up and forward and always popping in my face, it's bad enough. The notifications are bad enough for me, but to have that front and center, I don't know. I think it would severely hamper my productivity.
It would definitely hamper my productivity.
So that's why I love it. And when I'm in Facebook mode, it's fine because I'm in Facebook mode. And when I'm in Facebook mode, I am just browsing and chatting and interacting.
Sure. It makes sense there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do I want it at an OS level? That's a slippery slope. And to me, it'd be just like, I probably would turn it off. But to your point, Michael, I mean, they could implement it in a way where I can just opt out of that experience, then that's probably fine. But again, that's not typically something that Apple does.
True.
Yeah. Apple usually says, this is how you're going to use the device and we think is the best way, and that's your option.
Yep.
You know, notifications in iOS gives me what I need out of that, because I can set up apps like Facebook or whatever to give me notifications when I'm in other apps. So I get the little bar across the top, lets me know that there's a message from someone. I can respond to it right now or not. And I'm not taking out of the user experience for whatever app I'm currently in.
Now I got to have a bigger conversation with you guys about notifications in general, because...
Because notification center sucks?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, because I like the access to the information and the quick access to notifications, the things that it provides. The problem that I'm feeling more and more these days, especially now, again, that I've upgraded to Mountain Lion and I have Notification Center in there, and this was somewhat of a problem on my iOS devices, but it on my Mac, it's even more of a problem. Probably just because I'm on that device in terms of looking at the screen more. And it's a larger problem from a society perspective that I call information vomit. And there's like too much
awesome way to describe it.
There's too much information vomit in my world these days, and it's just growing more and more. And I feel like every application at this point now, whether it needs it or not, is implementing notifications. And every app I launch, it's like, can we send you notifications? And I'm always saying no,
because why would you
this
want
information
that?
Vomit problem? It's like, I do not need to know from every application on my system that something, some sort of weird event that some developer thinks is important needs to happen. And I feel like 90% of the time the developer is only throwing it in there so that they have a way to force to remind you that you installed a certain app.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like games that say, hey, you haven't played in 3 hours or 2 days.
Yeah, who the F cares?
Yes. And
yeah, those are the situations where I'm always saying no.
And but in many cases, those are the situations where I'm deleting an app.
Yeah.
So the half the problem with notifications, I think, is that one, it's too open. And then two, in terms of, it's great that I can manage it at a really granular level. Like I can decide on my iOS device, do I want a banner? Do I want an icon? Do I want, you know, all those things? But at the same time, from if I step back and look at it from a user and more from a broader Apple, this should be simple to use perspective, it's way too complicated for most people, and it's way too much stuff that you have to manage.
Yeah.
You know, I have to get a pop-up notification that asks me if I want it turned on or off. And then if I want to manage it, I have like 10 or it feels like 10, but it's probably more like 6 different sliders and options that I can flip. But you start multiplying those combinations together, right? And it's like a myriad of combinations of ways that you can set up any given notification for any given application. And that just adds a ton of complexity to something that really probably in 90% of the cases isn't that important and probably should just not be in there at all. So, you know, it's more of an implementation problem, but Apple enabled that implementation. So the blame kind of falls at two levels. So when we start getting into things like chat heads, it's just another area where information vomit can be spewed on my system. And it's another area where a technology can be exploited in really bad ways that I don't look forward to. So,
yeah. And yes, and I agree. It's crazy complex to manage all your notifications, and for some apps, it's an all or nothing thing. They will send you whatever notifications they want, but in others, you can go in and set, well, I want notifications for just this sort of thing, and then when you go into system settings and then notifications and look at how many apps you can control settings for. Holy crap. I mean, that's overwhelming right there.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's becoming very similar in my mind to privacy settings on Facebook. Like, you have to go in and manage privacy on Facebook, and it's gotten a lot better with a lot of the changes they've made, but, you know, it's still just this, like, really hard to understand for most people, really hard to figure out what you want on or off, and it's just like, do we really have to go down this path? Do these applications really need access to this? So I do, you know, in a lot of situations, I'd just like to go back to developers and go, like, really think, does this add any value to your application or not? Or are you just doing it because you can? And it feels like more and more people are just doing it because they can. And I don't even understand the rationale of, hey, you haven't played this game in a while. Because especially if it's a paid title, something that I just outright paid for, where is the revenue stream that, you know, they benefit from by me going back to this application beyond maybe reminding me that a certain developer on the splash screen made the application so that their name is in my mind the next time they come out with a new app. And maybe that's all the motivation they need, but certainly degrades my experience in terms of, you know, using my devices. If I made the mistake and, you know, clicked through and said, yes, you can send notifications to me.
Right, because, yeah, it doesn't take too long before you either shut the notifications off or delete the app.
Yeah.
All right. Time for iDevice picks.
Woo!
Jeff, you want to go first?
Sure. And I don't remember what I picked last week. So if this is the same thing I picked, I'll do something else. Did I pick Triage for the iPhone?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, then...
Sounds familiar, but maybe just because we've talked about it.
I saw it show up on Appler recently, so I think that's where I've heard of it.
Yeah, all right. Well, then, assuming I haven't talked about it before, Triage for iPhone is a slick little app that lets you quickly process through your email messages. So what it shows you is who the message is from, the subject, and like the first couple lines. And all you do is you flick up to archive the message, you flick down to leave the message as unread and in your inbox. And you can change the flick up to be a delete or to mark as read, and I think there's something else you can do with it. And that's all this app does. So you can sit there and very quickly on your iPhone process a lot of email messages without having to actually sit there in front of an email client and go through all the messages, where you tend to read more and it suddenly consumes all your time. If there's a message you feel you need to respond to immediately, you can reply from within the app. And so it's nice that feature is there. But the big thing is you can look at your messages and quickly process them. Either they're out of the way or they're left intact. So when you get into a regular email client on your iOS device or on your computer, you can then handle the emails however you need to. And I found that it's awesome for very quickly getting through a long list of emails. And it supports multiple email accounts.
Cool.
And I think it's like $1.
$2.
$2. All right. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Looks cool. Looks good for the ADD challenged, or the people who can't keep on the GTD problem or solution.
Right. Or people that are just so overrun with email all the time.
Yeah, you have
that. They would otherwise walk away from their computer and
holy
just say screw.
Cow. Yeah. Is there an option to delete? Is there a trash option?
Yes. Now, the way it works is you have two gestures, flip up, flick up, and flick down.
Mm-hmm.
Flick up is by default archive, but you can set it to delete or to mark as read. And then flick down is leave the message tagged as unread.
Gotcha. Cool. I like it. Yeah, I especially like the ability to not mark stuff as read, because you're just kind of flicking through and you want to see what's going on. I remember that being a big issue for me when I was dealing with lots of email.
Yeah, and it's a slick little application, and it's what I would like to see is a side flick motion that I could do as well, so that I could have delete and mark as read as options to go along with leave unread.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's some messages where I've seen enough, I don't want to delete it. But there's other messages where I'm going through, and I know I don't need it. I should just delete it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't easily change it. Well, you can easily change a gesture, but it's not something that you can choose on the fly. So I'd like to have a little bit more as far as options, but it's drop dead simple. It does what it's supposed to do very well, and it's worth the $1.99.
Cool. It's called Triage Email First Aid. Adam, what's your pick this week?
I am going to pick the latest game from Half Brick. And those people might know Half Brick from Fruit Ninja, from Jetpack Joyride, a bunch of other great stuff. But they have a new game out called Fish Out of Water. And it's incredibly fun, incredibly easy. I think it's 99 cents. On the App Store. It's both iPhone and iPad. It's a plus title, which I love, so I only had to buy it once. But in essence, the way it works is you have a number of different fish, and you pick them up, you pull them out of the water, and then you throw them by doing a flick gesture. And the idea is that you want to skip them across the water as far as you can, and for as many skips as you can. So almost like skipping a stone on a lake, but in this case, you're doing fish. And the different kinds of fish have different ways that they skip and different sort of features in terms of how they skip, how far they skip. Some are, you know, better for distance. Some are better for number of skips. And then what happens is you go three rounds of skipping different fish, and then at the end of that, you get scored by a series of crabs. and the crabs have different sort of attitudes about how they think, you know, like one crab will be the crab that really likes a high number of skips. One really likes far distance. One is more sort of level-headed about everything.
And one's the Simon Cowell.
Yeah, they do have the Simon Cowell crab. He's called, Hardwood, I think is his name. I can't remember what they call him. But basically, he doesn't like anything, including not even liking other crabs. So he's just the guy that hates everything.
Cool.
That's the basic element of the game. And then you can earn sort of level ups, and you can get these different jewels that allow you to combine these jewels together to get different kinds of power-ups on each level. There's little boosts, and then there's also a weather factor that's actually tied into a real-time clock. So you'll have calm weather, you might have rainy weather. I think there's like high surf conditions, and so those can affect not only your scores, but also how you sort of throw the fish and skip fish and things like that. And it's just incredibly fun. It's sort of, you know, one of these casual kind of games that you can pop open and just play. And then there's also a system. I'm mainly picking it because you can be in a league and compete against other people in your league, but then also different leagues will compete against each other in sort of a leaderboard. So there's a leaderboard system in it. So every day you can try and get the highest score in your league, what have you. And so there is a MacCast league that I welcome everybody to join.
Cool.
Literally, you just type in the name of the league that you want to be in. And so type in MacCast if you download the game and play it, and you can join our league. And then that way we can get high scores and beat out. I think the big league is the... there's an iPhone gaming website. Now I'm blanking on its name, and I don't have my iOS device in front of me.
Slide to Play?
Huh?
Touch Arcade?
Touch Arcade. Touch Arcade has a number of leagues, Touch Arcade 1, Touch Arcade 2, and they're always tops in the leaderboard. So
yeah.
I want to beat them out. So we need to get a lot of people in the MacCast League playing.
Do it.
So
okay, so I just downloaded this.
Yep.
and launched it, and the first thing it did is come up and say it'd like to send me push notifications.
Yeah, don't do that.
I just found it very funny. It is guilty of
the things that we were complaining about earlier, but everybody is, so I don't fault it for that. It also has in-app purchase, so it's 99 cents, you know, and of course it does the thing where you can buy, I mentioned you can create power-ups by combining these little crystals that you earn by leveling up. Of course you can buy crystal packs to speed up your ability to get power-ups and score higher and things like that. But I have found, I've gone through, I think I'm at level 14 or 15. I've played for about a week now, and I have had no urge and no desire to actually spend more than the 99 cents. So I will probably just to support the developers, because I think they make great titles, but you know, it's not overly aggressive in the in-app purchase, which I appreciate.
Cool.
And it's fun.
Yeah, it's a buck. Fish out of water. So my pick this week is Instacast 3. And I'm pretty sure I haven't picked it yet. I picked the original Instacast. But for those who don't know, or maybe for those who have the original Instacast and don't know that there's an Instacast 3, there is. And you have to go get a different one in order to do it. But they have improved the wonderful Instacast interface that was there in Instacast 2, and which is why I purchased it, and I'm very happy with it. So for those who don't know what Instacast is, it's a podcatcher or podcast application, and it's very beautifully designed. It has a lot of very intuitive features, and everything just works very nice. It looks clean and works well, and those are my favorite things about any application, if it works well and if it looks nice. And it has a lot of useful features in it as well. It's a universal application, so it'll work on your iPad and your iPhone. It has iCloud syncing. It's really easy to find and subscribe to podcasts. I believe there's an import from iTunes feature if you still do podcasts through iTunes. It allows you to cache episodes for later, mark them as favorites. It has playlist features. You can create smart playlists based on certain criteria. There's a sleep timer. There's different playback speeds, tons and tons of stuff. Take a look at it. If you see it and you think, hey, this looks like something I would enjoy, then you probably will. If you're into podcasts, I think this is the best podcast application to get. And I am very much addicted to using it to fuel my podcast addiction. So Instacast 3. It's $5. Very much worth it. So check it out. What clients do you guys use?
Downcast.
Yeah?
I've flopped between Downcast and Instacast, but I've kind of standardized on Downcast.
I don't like the way that Downcast looks.
Huh?
I don't like the way that Downcast looks. I think it's too
I might have to check out Instacast again. I didn't like Instacast on the iPhone for a while. I think I preferred it on the iPad, but I don't know. I may have to, now that they have a new version out. I don't like the idea of having to buy another new version, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, Downcast, I mean, it is very popular, and it looks like it's gets the job done. Jeff, what are you using?
You know, I'm actually using Apple's podcast app right now.
Oh.
And I wanted to give it a fair shake, because the first time I tried it, I was like, what a bunch of crap, and immediately dismissed it. And after they did the update where they took out the skeuomorphic stuff, I thought, you know, I'll give this a shot, because I'm just being nice. So that's what I'm using right now.
Cool.
You know, I switched back to it too, to Apple's podcast app, and it is a lot better. I have to give them credit. It is a lot more functional than it was, but it's still not as good as Downcast or Instacast, in my opinion.
Well, you know,
it is a lot better.
My favorite thing, more than anything else, in Instacast, and I think that Apple's podcast app actually has this feature, which is in Instacast, the song forward back button, you know, the two arrows with the line, that in like the music application would move you to the next episode or to the next podcast, which is crazy aggravating, especially if you're doing back and it sends you back to the beginning of the episode. What Instacast does is those are 30-second skip forward or back buttons, and I think you can even customize those for a certain amount of time interval if you want different ones. So like you can go 5 seconds, 10, you can go from 5 seconds to 10 minutes and a bunch of different stops in between. So that's really cool. And I think that Apple's application also does that, but that's one of my favorite features. I use it a lot because I stop paying attention to something and then I have to jump back.
Do they offer the ability to map that to swipe gestures? Because that's one thing that Downcast does that I really like.
I don't know. It's not something that really appeals to me, so I haven't even looked into it.
Yeah, it's because I listen in the car, so I have swipe gestures enabled on Downcast, and so I can literally just flip my finger over the screen, and it'll jump back or forward, you know, X number of seconds.
With Instacast, the in my car, because they map that 30-second skip feature to the forward and back feature, I just use the forward and back button on my head unit.
Well, you have fancy stuff. I don't have that. I don't have that advantage. I have an old car.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. All right. So Instacast's $5. Instacast 3. You can find all of our show notes and the podcast picks at wehavecommunicators.com. Rate the show on iTunes if you like. It helps us out in the rankings. Helps us get more listeners. And of course, tell people that you enjoy the show. Tell other people that might enjoy it. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the way to contact us for anything. If you need to contact me or all of us collectively, I can forward emails along to these guys as well. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. 202-642-6667 is the phone number. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter, and Zazzle.com/Jay Gamet.
And as always, it's wow, I can't talk tonight. Good show. Like being here, Michael. Yay. How was that?
I like that one best.
Awesome.
That's good. Adam Christensen from the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com. This is a member show.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. Follow at GetAppler and check out Appler if you haven't already done it. GetAppler.com. Social app discovery. It's fun. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?